This is the Frogcast.
Austin. We talk about some injuries that are hurting the TCU defense as well as some other issues. We take a look forward to SMU, our friends across I-30, and even broach the topic of whether we should keep playing them, as well as look across the country at some games that might have caught your attention. All this and so much more on the Frogcast. Well, guys, we got the win that we needed, but most importantly, we got the big blowout victory that we needed as TCU won 70-7 over Stephen F. Austin there in Fort Worth on Saturday. We were able to put up a lot of points. We were able to play a lot of freshmen. We were able to go 2 and 3 deep, not only on offense, but defense. And as we see on defense, we need it. But all in all, this was a big win and a good day for the program because we were able to get our confidence back. We were also able to get a lot of people onto the field. Trey, I want to start with you and ask you, what did you see on Saturday when the Horned Frogs took on the Lumberjacks that made you believe that this is actually a top five team in Fort Worth?
Well, you know, it's hard to take a ton out of a game like that, but there were some positives, and one for me was the offense. I thought Trevon Boykin looked a lot better, a lot more comfortable. I know he wasn't under as much pressure, and, you know, SFA doesn't have the corners that, you know, Minnesota has, but thought they looked he looked better. I love our wide receivers. 11 different receivers caught passes, 4 different receivers scored touchdowns for the Frogs. I love that group. And it's not just, you know, Dotson. It's the young guys. You've got so many people contributing. You know, and Lissenby finally gotten, you know, got some action where they were hitting deep balls. I love seeing all of that. The linebackers, you know, considering the circumstances, I thought played really good. But, you know, I don't think there was anything you can say against SFA necessarily makes me think TCU's top five right now. But what I do think, it showed that they got better from week one to week two. And I think there's going to be another improvement from week two to week three. And then I think that's going to put them in a good position for when they have to take on Texas Tech.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the schedule has set up well for us, as much as I would have enjoyed playing Minnesota week two instead of week one. But all of those things are setting up for this team to get stronger as the season moves on, especially moving into conference play. Daniel, what did you see at Eamon Carter on Saturday that convinced you that we got better from week one to week two and that possibly this is actually a top five team?
Well, Boykin throws for 285 yards. He gets 4 touchdowns, and that was just barely in a little more than just into the third quarter. Aaron Green got a couple touchdowns. Lissenby looked really good. I liked seeing a Story. Story's going to be a good receiver too. And then of course, Turpin was just electric. That's going to be a really good key going forward. Even on that first drive, it wasn't that convincing because we go 3 and out, then a terrible punt. But I don't know. They got it together. It felt like it clicked. They were playing with some aggression, some meaning. Before, it just kind of seemed like they were almost just going through the motions. I just didn't see the intensity that I would want to see. But after they got that first touchdown, they really, really picked it up. And it's tough to say, like Trey was saying, you know, it is Stephen F. Austin, FCS school. And actually, I was reading that TCU is the highest ranked school they've ever played, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But so there's some things you can take from it that definitely say, you know, we're better. It's definitely than week one, maybe better than last year, at least on offense. But there's also a little bit of, because it is Well, it's Stephen F. Austin.
It is Stephen F. Austin. And we seem determined to play, I still call it 1AA, the FCS team every year. I don't know. I treat it like an exhibition game in my mind, actually. So luckily, everybody was able to play. We got a lot of people on the field. But the one thing you don't want to have happen in a game like this is have somebody get hurt. And we lost a defensive starter. This is the 11th defensive starter that we have lost since the end of the Peach Bowl. If you just want to step back and think about what that means, actually. So we have been decimated on defense. Trey, when you look at the injuries that have taken place to this team on the field, as well as some off-field stuff that none of us are probably fully aware of what it actually is actually going on, what do you see as the impact of seeing Mike Freeze walk away from the program with a difficult situation that we're not quite sure what it is? Some other off-the-field situations that they're doing their best to keep under wraps, as well as just injury after injury to the defense that we need Gary Patterson to make strong for the Big 12. What's the impact of injuries, Trey?
I mean, there's no other way to say it, but it sucks. You know, the Frogs got lucky last season by not having to deal with a ton of injuries, or at least injuries that, you know, had long-term impacts, like these season-long, you know, season-ending injuries that we've seen this season. You know, I think for me, losing Sammy Douglas was the biggest blow out of the linebackers, just because I felt like he was, you know, had more experience. I thought he was the better player. Losing Freeze, you know, is bad, but, you know, he was young. It's not like we lost a ton of experience. It's just another inexperienced guy stepping up. And, you know, I guess obviously these guys didn't beat out Freeze, you know, in the fall to win the position, but now they have it. I mean, they stepped in, you know, I think it was Howard had 9 tackles, and I think Wilson had 9 also. So they were okay. You know, Patterson had some praise. You know, it's just tough losing Ioka's, you know, it stings, you know, it's just another, you know, pile on top of, you know, everything else that's going on. I do think, you know, hopefully we maybe get Pearson back this week, if not by Tech. So that, I think, is really going to help the linebackers, because he can eat up some of those, you know, linemen and keep the linebackers free to, you know, roam the field. So it stinks, you know, and McFarland, I mean, that hurts too. But I think we have some defensive ends that I'm hoping maybe can step in. I don't know. It's just, it's all like such a question mark. You know, it's like they look great against SFA, but you know, SFA doesn't have, you know, an offense that Baylor or Oklahoma State or whoever has, you know, so I don't know. It just, it stinks.
Daniel, what do you see as the impact on defense with injuries one game away from getting into Big 12 play?
Well, I think it's kind of scary. When I saw Iloka go down, I was like, oh man, what else can go wrong? But the kids, they stepped it up, and yeah, it was SFA, but you know, they're gonna do their best. And towards the end of the game, or at the end of the game, I wasn't nearly as concerned about it, because the guys like Howard and some of the others, and so it's tough. We'll see next week with SMU. They're better than a Stephen F. Austin, so it's a nice next step to see where we're going before we get into Big 12 play. But it's there's still some lingering concern, definitely.
Yeah, I share those concerns along all three phases of the defense, along the front line where we have been hurt on the field and off the field. Obviously, we have a new set of linebackers. Not only did Freeze beat all those guys out, but when Sammy Douglas got hurt in Minnesota, Ty Summers was the first guy to go in, and now he has seemingly slipped down the depth chart. And so we are really thin on defense, and there's no nice way to put it. I actually had a listener write in and ask, is Kenny Iloka's actual production the biggest loss, or is it just the psychological impact of losing another starter? And I'm almost convinced that at this point it's got to impact the team to see yet another guy that was going to be counted on through spring, through summer, through fall, go down. And so if there's anything I'm hoping for with this team, it's that they do stick together. They have that phrase "unite for the fight" that is their theme this year. Well, they definitely need to unite. So that is our hope for the Frogs moving forward.
And I mean, you know, in years past, I probably would have been even more concerned because TCU didn't have an offense like this. But it does give me hope with an offense like this. You know, the Frogs might be in, you know, a shootout every game. You know, they might have to put up 50 points, which is a lot of pressure, but, you know, they have the ability to do it. So, you know, if they have to win 50-48, 50-49, like, you know, it is what it is. But at least the offense is, you know, great, and they're not, you know, what they were, what, in 2013 or whatever it was.
Yeah, we will probably triple our offensive production from 2013 to this year. So, yeah, it was nice to see the offense clicking because, Trey, I think what you're saying is probably going to be accurate. We'll probably get a snapshot of that the conference game out in Lubbock, that we might give up a lot of points to Tech, but I think we're going to be able to outscore a lot of people. We're going to have to outscore a lot of people. Well, before we get to Texas Tech, we get to play our cross-town rivals, at least that's what some people call it, and the SMU Mustangs. As many of you know, Chad Morris is a first-year head coach at SMU. Through the offseason, he seems to have brought a lot of energy and a lot of focus to a dormant program. Some people are naive enough to say that he has the ability to do at SMU over a period of time what Gary Patterson has done at TCU. I do not believe that, but many people are saying that. Trey, looking forward to this game. Not only what do you see in terms of us when we take on the Ponies this Saturday evening, what's your prediction and what are some things that we should keep an eye on in that game? But let's just go ahead and ask that second question as well, because I want to hear what you have to say. Should we keep playing SMU?
Well, first off, I'm really looking forward to this game, actually, for the first time probably in a long time, because I think it is another step up, you know, from SFA. So we can see kind of, you know, where the Frogs are at, and, you know, we can always compare that to how Baylor looked against SMU, because SMU has looked better, did lose to Baylor, but beat, you know, UNT 31-13. You know, I think they're getting good quarterback play, and, you know, I think it's going to be an interesting test. It should be fun. It's going to be a night game, so all of that should be great, but I'm of the opinion that I wouldn't care if TCU dropped this game completely or went to it, you know, maybe every other year, every 4 years, something, spaced it out. I would much rather see us schedule anybody else in a Power Five conference, whether it's, you know, somebody at the bottom like a Wake Forest or a, you know, Vanderbilt or a Washington State or whatever it might be. I think you get more by beating kind of those teams that are a little bit better. I'm not saying it's a huge step up. That or drop the FCS team. I think either one of those two things got to happen. If you want to keep, if Coach Patterson is, you know, adamant about keeping the FCS team, then I think, you know, we've got to do something about moving on from SMU. And I don't really like the excuse that everybody else does it. Like, let's do something different. I mean, I know the Frogs have, you know, Arkansas and Ohio State and all that coming up, but it would also be nice to have, you know, something else to go with those. I don't know. I just, it's probably me being a little bit selfish from a season ticket holder standpoint. It just kind of is disappointing that you start off with a really, you know, exciting, anticipated game like Minnesota, and then you go SFA and SMU. It's really kind of boring. Like, you know, love going to the games, but when it's 70-7, you know, I would much rather see a more competitive game. So that's why I would kind of like to see them dropped, but I know other people feel differently.
Daniel, what do you see about SMU, not only this Saturday, but going forward and keeping them on the schedule?
Well, I'm definitely if they improve and improve significantly, and I'm all for it. If they keep playing as poorly as an FCS team, I would not want to do that. I do like the idea of dropping the FCS team. I think it's, I don't know, kind of not embarrassing, but it's like we could do a lot better because the blowouts – you know, they get people a lot of work, but, you know, that was on TV, and, the, you know, the crowd left at halftime. I was there. It was hot up in the seats, and, you know, I went over and stood in the shade, and I saw on TV, it looks like the Tech game from a week or two ago. So that's no good. But Chris Delcani always makes a good argument for playing SMU as far as a financial standpoint. It gives us you know, basically every other year an extra home game if we have to play in Dallas. So it has its pros and its cons. But if as long as they get better and play, and I think they will with Chad Morris. I don't know how long he sticks around, though. But, yeah, I'm okay with it as long as they don't stay at the very, very bottom of the barrel.
Yeah. The only reason I want to keep SMU on the schedule is as much as I have gone ahead and accepted our status as a Power 5 team, and it is a top-of-the-line Power 5 team, especially in the Big 12, when we were in the Mountain West, when we were in the Conference USA, I used to just rail against Power 5 teams, middle-of-the-road Power 5 teams that would not play us because they're like, you know, we wanted that game really bad. Whether it was being able to get somebody on, you know, somebody that would have been the equivalent of Oklahoma State in the mid-2000s on the schedule, we couldn't even get – we had the hardest time getting a game like that. This game is local. A lot of fans will travel across I-30 just to be able to go to this game like you highlighted. This is a second home game in a lot of ways. And so I think, you know, I am not much for Southwest Conference sentimentality. I don't believe in that. But I do like keeping a local team like that on the schedule. Hopefully they can improve. But I can be convinced otherwise. If they don't improve, we need to go ahead and drop them. But I'm actually hopeful that that game will be competitive and that we will be able to not only get, you know, a good local game on there every other year in terms of travel, but that we'll be able to get a good win and we'll be against an improving team. But if we do keep SMU, I agree with you, Trey, that we should drop the FCS game and find a bottom barrel Power 5 team. Many of those teams that you mentioned, there's plenty of other options that would be good destinations for us to travel to. I think that will help us. Texas plays two Power 5 teams every year, I believe, non-conference. This year they have Notre Dame and they had Cal. There's no reason we can't find that kind of schedule to adapt to ourselves in order to improve our schedule and improve our travel and have somebody good to play in the years going forward. We want to look forward to some other things that have gone on in college football across the country. There were a lot of big games that were non-conference that got highlighted on national television this week. One of them in the Big 12 was Oklahoma traveling to Knoxville to take on the Tennessee Volunteers. Trey, what did you see in the game that Oklahoma pulled out in double overtime to shock the Knoxville faithful there pulling for the Volunteers?
Yeah, the you know, I wasn't overly, you know, impressed with the Oklahoma offense. Baker Mayfield wasn't great. He only threw for 187 yards. He had two interceptions. He did have three touchdowns. You know, they held P. Ryan to 78 yards rushing. But the thing I was impressed with was the Oklahoma defense. They looked, you know, really good, lights out, held Tennessee to 254 yards, only 125 yards through the air. So, they looked, you know, really good. They're going to be tough down the stretch. I just don't know if I'm still not sold on Baker Mayfield. I just don't know if he's going to be enough for their offense. I mean, they seem to have other parts. Like I said, you know, we all know about P. Ryan. Sterling Shepard looked really good in this game. He had 74 yards and two touchdowns. So they've got, you know, talent at the other positions. I'm still not sold, but it was a really good win for them. I mean, it was a hostile environment, you know, sold out place. They had the whole checkerboard, you know, crowd thing going on in Knoxville. So it was great. And it's a big win for the Big 12. So I thought it was a really good game to watch.
Yeah, I agree, especially with your assessment of Baker Mayfield. It was a big win for the Big 12. It's probably going to be the signature non-conference win for the Big 12. And when hopefully if we can beat Oklahoma, that will transfer to us in terms of helping our schedule out. But to highlight what you said about Baker Mayfield, I am not sold on him either. He actually, not to go all Texas cliche, he reminds me of Matt Searson from Friday Night Lights, the TV show. He's gritty, he's tough, but he's a step slow and he's going to miss an open receiver at just the wrong time. So I don't think that he is going to be the answer to winning the Big 12, but I see why players want to play for him. And I see why the offensive line as well as the receivers will just kind of play as hard as they can for Baker Mayfield because they think he's worth playing for. And that's what you at least want in a quarterback. So, Daniel, what are some other things across the country in terms of non-conference early season games that you saw that you'd want to highlight today?
I really liked the Michigan State game. I thought they took care of Oregon quite handily. It was they played really well. Connor Cook looked much better than he did when I watched him in the Cotton Bowl. Their defense is lights out, and that's the game I was looking forward to, other than Big 12 and stuff.
A couple of things that I saw that I wanted to lift up here is, of course, Arkansas lost to Toledo. Brett Bielema spends most of the week bad-mouthing Ohio State's schedule, saying that they're not going to play any ranked teams, and then Brett Bielema goes out there and gets beat by a MAC team. So the jokes just kind of write themselves in that situation. But perhaps, maybe just perhaps, the SEC West is not one step below Jesus. So it was good to see them humbled a little bit. Auburn went to overtime to beat Jacksonville State, which I assumed was in Florida but was not. And so that did not look too sharp for them. But the game I really was impressed with, and I fell asleep watching it and then woke up to watch the very end, is BYU beat Boise State. And this is the second straight week that BYU has played a good team and won in the last few seconds. 2 weeks ago, they beat Nebraska. Yesterday, they beat Boise State. And so BYU has probably the best combination of two wins of anybody in the country. And getting those two games behind them, they're in a position to go 10-2 or 11-1. And while they don't have access through the Gang of Five, and while they don't have access to the playoff the way that a Power Five conference champion would, I don't see any reason why they can't go 10-2 or 11-1 and be able to fight for a spot in the New Year's Six Bowl. And I know they used to be conference mates of ours, and I know they weren't the easiest people to play for, but I still find myself pulling for an underdog, and I'm fearful that they're actually going to end up in the Big 12 if we expand. So if they have a good season, if they go to a big postseason bowl and do well, that'll probably actually pave the way for possible Big 12 expansion. A couple things we wanted to share with you as we're wrapping up here. We want to thank Killer Frogs and their new store that's about to launch, where you can get all of the great frog t-shirts and hats and things such as that. They have been willing to let us share a little bit of the good news of what's going on at the Frogcast. So we want to thank Wes and Scott and the guys at killerfrogs.com for all of their support in this new venture. A couple other things that we wanted you to do to support the Frogcast. Go to iTunes and subscribe, search for The Frogcast, and you'll be able to see us come up right away with our big purple icon. If you would follow us on iTunes, that really helps. Also, if you'd be willing to go there and leave a review, a positive review, TCU fans only, no Baylor fans, we would love for you to follow us and leave a review on iTunes. That would go a long way. And also, feel free to find us on Twitter at TheFrogcastTCU. Follow us on Twitter. We have updates on there daily, as well as some interaction with fans. And also, if you go to the Facebook page, The Frogcast, you can follow us, and we post the link, as well as things that are going on as we prepare for each new episode. That and so much more that you can find at thefrogcast.com. Well, one of the things that I get reminded of is that I'm a grumpy old man at a young age, and what grumpy old men do is complain about these so-called gimmicky uniforms. TCU rolled out in their frog skin camo uniforms for the game Saturday against Stephen F. Austin. And I'd be curious as to what you guys thought. Just what is your quick hit on the new uniforms that the Frogs rolled out in, and perhaps maybe this whole entire trend of mix and match uniforms in terms of the appeal that it has to not only fans, but to players and recruits?
I personally liked them. I thought they looked really good. I'm a fan of pretty much all the new kind of uniforms that we're seeing across college football. I mean, there has been a couple that I think have been outlandish or don't look that great, but for the most part, overall, I'm a big fan of the trend. I like what Oregon does. I like what the Frogs are doing. It would have been nice maybe to see a little bit more purple in these gray uniforms. But I almost kind of think they did it since SFA is purple. I know they wore white, but I think the gray, I don't know. It's just in my head that there's a reason behind why they wore gray. Maybe they just wanted to wear gray in that game. But I thought, like I said, I liked them a lot. When they first debuted these new lizard skin uniforms, you know, all together with the purple pants and jerseys and white and gray all together, I didn't think they looked that great, but when they mix them and match them, I thought they've looked really good. So consider me a fan.
Daniel, you got any thoughts on the trend of alternate uniforms, especially those for the Frogs that they debuted on Saturday?
Yeah, as long as they're tasteful, they can get a little crazy. I don't know if y'all saw Louisville's a couple weeks ago.
Those were hideous.
Those were awful. Texas Tech has had some ones that are just weird. At the stadium, I couldn't see them that well. It didn't look that good to me from my seat. I get home, I see it on TV. It looks pretty good. I personally like the frog on the helmet. This don't have it. But, you know, it's fun. The kids like it. And if we can kind of have the gimmicky uniforms in the early games that, you know, aren't conference play, it's the beginning of the season, it's just kind of a fun thing. And we don't do this constantly. You know, we stick to a more traditional type uniform going forward, definitely more purple. But, I didn't mind it at all.
I was reminded scrolling through Twitter in the second half of the game why we have these in the first place. And I saw a retweet from Sean Robinson, who is the number one dual threat quarterback in the country in the 2017 class at Denton Geyer, who is a TCU commit. And he said something along the lines of how sick and cool these new TCU uniforms were. And if the number one quarterback in the country likes the cool uniforms, guess what we're going to keep wearing?
Exactly.
It is what recruits like. It seems to be the trend that they're going towards. And recruiting is just such a battle anyway. And so, you know, there's a few teams that don't feel the need to do this. Alabama does not have 10 combinations. Penn State, Ohio State don't do that. Penn State might need them at the trend they're going. But there's a handful of programs that say they'll never do that. There's a handful of programs that say there's only one way to wear the uniform. But I like the style. I like the fact that they mix it up. And more importantly, the recruits like the options that it shows. And if a kid like that that's got who knows how many followers across the state of Texas is tweeting out how great the uniforms look at TCU, to think about that would have been a case 15 years ago, I'm all for it if that's what we need to do. Well, guys, in the time that we have left, is there anything else that you want to share to recap the game that we had against Stephen F. Austin or anything else that we saw across the country in college football?
No, I think, you know, like I mentioned, I hope this, you know, builds confidence with the team because, like, we all talked about how, you know, kind of devastating it feels to lose another player on defense. But I do think, you know, putting up 70 points, offense looking good, defense, you know, getting pick six, getting, you know, I hate the word swag, but getting a little bit of that swagger back, you know, from last season and starting to get this thing, you know, rolling forward. But I'm really excited about this game coming up this week. So I think we'll have some good things to talk about next week.
Daniel, anything else you want to share as we close out?
Yeah, I found something kind of interesting. On the quarterback situation, Boykin goes 18 for 27 for 285 yards, has a quarterback rating, or the QBR, or whatever it is, of 95. Matt Davis, SMU, is 17 for 24 for 171 yards. The QBR is 86.3. Both Baylor quarterbacks end up with a QBR of about 75. So congrats to Boykin and even SMU's quarterback for beating out the golf cart champion.
Well, we went this long without highlighting Baylor, so you had to slip that in there. And I'm just okay with that. Because it's not every day that Lamar puts up 28 points against your defense. So.
Oh, yeah.
Have to slip that in there. One thing that I wrote down that I had to mention that I didn't get a chance to highlight yet is they won 42-28. Texas gave up 462 yards to Rice. Former TCU assistant Dave Bailiff is the head coach down there at Rice. 462 yards to Rice to their 277 yards. Rice had five turnovers. I think two of them were in the red zone, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong. If they don't fumble five times, if they just fumble three times, there's a high likelihood that Rice would have beat Texas in DKR. And so I am just hoping for a really long, ugly season in Austin, but then they still decide to give Charlie Strong a third year. And so I don't see a lot of hope coming out of Austin, and I'm going to go ahead and tell you they're going to get beat by Cal this week. So we'll be looking forward to talking and laughing about that. Well, guys, we hope you enjoyed the chance to catch up and share a little bit about our thoughts on the Horned Frogs and their big win this week. And so for Trey Fallon, for Daniel Southern, I am Jeff Mitchell, and thank you for listening to the Frogcast.